Mic check one, check one.
Check two, check two.
All hello. Right.
Aloha, everybody. I say that
because you want to be in Hawaii.
I wish
right
we were
now.
In Hawaii. I wish we were doing the show in Hawaii right now. We should always do with this. We should go to Hawaii once a month.
I wouldn't be against that.
Okay. I might move there.
I wouldn't blame you. It's nice. Just stay away from the gangs.
The gangs. All right. That's the dumbest thing. Watch the gangs. You know we live in LA, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, watch the gangs. Watch be careful. Yeah. Gangs. And there's a lot of crack there.
Yeah. Okay.
So just be careful.
Yeah. It's so much more dangerous than tranquil Los Angeles. Yes.
And giant crabs. You have to watch for giant crabs.
Nothing that you says makes sense. You literally are just being a person from Iowa.
Yeah,
it's like, they heard one little thing.
And you can't get a good pot roast.
Yeah, you can't get a good pot roast in Hawaii. Well, you're an asshole if that's what you're looking for when you go to Hawaii. You should be eating fish, which you should be doing. And you should be serving.
And giant crabs.
And giant crabs, which are in gangs that hunt you down.
Yes.
This is the dumbest opening that we've ever had.
And we've done some dumb openings.
We've done some stupid openings. This show, by and large, is...
We got a lot we're going to talk about today. We're going to do Purge Anarchy, Snowpiercer. We're going to talk about... Festival.
You just shut down that dumb riff.
I tried. Did I succeed?
Yes, you did. I don't know.
Yeah, all right, we'll see. Might come
you
back.
You started the stupid riff, and then you ended it.
Yeah, and neither was intentional.
Okay. Yes, so, we got a lot of cool movies to talk about. I have much to say about The Purge.
I can't wait to hear it, and I got a lot to say about Snowpiercer, too.
All right, well, this is going to be exciting business. I guess we'll just, what do we want to do? We want to update some folks on...
One of the things we want to mention is the Dana Gould t-shirts. We were a little back-ordered on those. We are catching up and going through all of those orders right now. The demand has been incredible.
It's been great.
We just need to get more from the supplier.
Right.
So they're going out as fast as we get them, we send them out.
We got almost all of them sent out.
We did.
We're just a little back, but some people were like, I ordered this 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we can't print them.
Yeah.
We can only ship them out when we get them. But there's a couple that are still outstanding, but we're 90% through them.
Right. So they're coming soon. We're going to be in Comic-Con this week.
Oh, my God. So excited about Comic-Con. I can't even tell you how excited I am about Comic-Con. I love going every year, but this year we're going to be pretty busy. We have meetings set up, interviews. We're going to probably do Rotten Tomatoes. We're going to do Rick Meyer's Kung Fu Extravaganza on Thursday night at 8.
Well, here's the thing that I just found out about Rick Meyer's.
Let's talk about that for a moment. Are you premiering? You know what's weird with Comic-Con, all the stuff we have going on? You're premiering a movie that you're in, and I'm premiering a comic book.
That's so great. Usually we just went down there as fan nerds. I would just go down there to buy Batman paraphernalia.
And the movie's not Earbuds that you're premiering.
It's not Earbuds. Earbuds is in post-production. So I... the martial arts kid that I played security guard number one, which if I don't get an Oscar for that, something is wrong.
Yeah,
the system is broken. Jim Wilson, Don the Dragon Wilson's brother. Don, of course, has been on the show. It's Don and Cynthia Rothrock. Calls me and goes, hey, you're on the panel with Cynthia and James Liu? And I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, you're right.
And you didn't tell us?
He goes, and you didn't tell us? I go, I didn't know. He goes, we're showing a trailer.
The movie that you're in.
Yeah, we're showing a trailer of Martial Arts Kid. I went, what? Because James Liu, who we did the panel with last year, is an amazing martial artist and fight choreographer. He did the fight choreography on Martial Arts Kid, which I was there one of the days, which was so cool.
And now they're recutting the trailer.
He goes, we're going to recut to put your scene in. I go, well, that shouldn't take that much work because I have like one or two lines. I don't have a lot of lines, but he's going to put it in there. So, folks, if you are at Comic-Con and come to Rick Meyer's Kung Fu Extravaganza, you will see the Martial Arts Kid, a 3-minute trailer of it or whatever. And you'll, Cynthia Rothrock will be there.
Yes.
And James Liu. And they'll go into more detail about everything that they did because she's one of the co-stars. So more reason to come to Rick Meyer's Kung Fu Extravaganza.
And also, Eric Jacobus from the Stunt People will also be on that panel. We will be announcing a project with him very soon as well.
Dude, it is all coming together.
And also, I'm really excited. I'm going to be at the Thrillbent panel with Mark Wade on Thursday as well, but at 5:30. It's going to be really cool. We're going to announce my new comic book, Long Ago and Far Away, and also... we're going to be taking pitches because Mark Wade is going to fund one digital comic book.
What?
So if you're there and you want to pitch a comic book, you can pitch to Mark Wade and myself. And let's just say if you say while you're pitching that you're a big Comedy Film Nerds fan, I might put in a word for you at, with Mark Wade.
To get you up digital, to the top of the list, maybe. How's that
to
sound?
To get your digital comic made.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I think we should introduce our guest because I know he's going to be having some business he's going to want to talk about.
He goes to
there.
Comic-Con every year as
every
well?
Every year. Ladies and gentlemen, he's been...
Joss Whedon.
He's been on the show before. He has a very funny podcast called The Naughty Show, which, of course, will be in this year's PodFest. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Tripoli.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. Sounds like you guys have amazing stuff going on. Well, what a great... Well, you guys in Hawaii? Going to Comic-Con? That's awesome.
It's great.
You're in a karate movie?
It's the coolest thing. It is the coolest... I didn't get to do any action scenes.
What's your character's name, by the way?
I think it's Security Guard Number One.
Yeah.
I think
they gotta give you a name, dude. They gotta give you something.
Officer Jenkins or something like that. Maybe I'm just gonna invent a name.
We are living every 18-year-old boy's dream.
Yeah, we are.
How awesome is that?
30
man?
Years
being
later.
Being a karate movie, going to Comic-Con, and then they're gonna show your movie at Comic-Con?
I did a scene with Don the Dragon Wilson, which was like boyhood hero to watch him, you know, and it's a scene where, you know, it's a quick interaction, but he was the coolest guy. And watching these guys... like James Liu with TJ Storm, who's an amazing martial artist.
What a great name TJ Storm is.
He is such a badass.
Right?
What else could you do with a name like that?
You can't work at Burger King when your name is TJ Storm.
No, and when you and Google him online, Storm is like, well, everyone just calls him Storm, but TJ, he's an amazing physical specimen.
I'm sure.
He is one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. And he, though, to watch him and Don, I was there, they had been doing this fight scene all day. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And you'd see they'd be like cut, and they'd be like, oh, you could tell they were tired. But when the cameras were on, man, they were in
go time.
Such professionals.
Now, when you're around guys like that, like you know, the fight choreographers, these legends of martial arts, they really are legends.
Yes, I hope someone starts a fight.
No, yeah. I was going to say, it's like when you're talking to them, because they're all nice guys, too, when you talk to them. Like when we had Don the Dragon Wilson in, as you're talking to him, isn't it always kind of in the back of your head that, like, I think he's going to punch me in the face. I think at some point... something's not going to sit well, and he's going to punch me in the face.
The Bruce Lee, wasn't there a legendary Bruce Lee fight on set where he actually got in a fight with one of the guys in the movie, and like they just filmed it, and they're like, "Well, this it's really going right now," and like, "Let's get this." Like, that's what you're hoping for. Just I'm doing Bruce Lee, maybe he'll beat the hell out of somebody. Yeah.
Keep the camera rolling.
Well, I know, Sam. Like you've watched a lot of UFC. You've done a lot
all
of
day,
shows
every day.
Yeah, and so you've met these guys. And when you're hanging out with them, I remember when we were doing a show in Cincinnati, and Rich Franklin was hanging out with us after the show. You said to me, I hope some guy starts some shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, don't you just, when you're hanging out with these guys, and again, Sam, they're the nicest guys. They're cool and they're professional.
They're laid back.
They're laid back because they're like...
And in their heads, they're thinking, I hope that's the opposite of what happens.
Yeah, they don't want
nobody
that.
Starts any
You just hope some dumb shithead, like, hey, fucking pussy.
And you want to see him get his ass kicked.
I've always felt bad for bouncers in Vegas, because that's kind of like MMA hub.
Yeah.
Like, every week there's a fight in some... And that means all these MMA fighters come in. Imagine if you're, like, bouncing at, like, a very popular club out there. Like, you don't know... who you're going about to bounce. You don't know who this guy is or what discipline he has. You never know. You're like, hey, dude, you got to go, oh, God. And they just choke you out. You're like, man, I'm just trying to pay bills here, dude.
I know. Well, I guess in Vegas, you can't hire a guy that's just big anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be like, what's your ranking? Like, what's your
what belt are you, bro?
Yeah.
How many belts do you have?
Do you have a sponsor?
There's a story of Joe Rogan got hired to do some big event in Vegas, like some corporate gig, mm-hmm. and he's late, and he's trying to go in, and this giant bouncer won't let him in. And he's like, hey, dude, I got to get in there. I'm doing a show. They pay me to be there. And the bouncer's like, nah, dude, you're not going in there. And like the bouncer goes, points at his chest, goes, no, dude, you're not going to, grabs his finger, cranks it down, guy goes down. Okay, you can go in. Like, you don't know who you're messing with. And you're right. That's got to be like every bouncer's nightmare. Like yeah. any dude getting crazy, you got to bounce him, and he knows like karate or jujitsu. Right.
He's just a Navy SEAL, and he's already like has his you know, you just have a red dot on your forehead, and you're just like,
take it somewhere else. Yeah, dude. I do a podcast called Punch Drunk Sports. It's a sports podcast, and we do Fight of the Week. And so every week I'm looking for like mm-hmm. these YouTube videos of Fight of the Week. And you even see on like the lowest level of martial arts how these dudes, low level, mess up everybody. Yeah. Like there's a million ones of just some dude who probably took jujitsu for about 4 or 5 days, just throwing rear naked chokes yes. on everybody. There's one of these two guys fighting in a Jack in a Box over a cheeseburger. And the one dude is really big and the one dude's very small. Big dude goes at him, guy takes him down, single leg, gets him and throws him in a jujitsu clamp and just chokes him out. And you're like,
does he eat the cheeseburger after?
Then I think he takes his cheeseburger. He
stands over the big dude and like, yeah, delicious. Yes,
there you go. Mm. So that's like, it's crazy. Now, if you're a bouncer, every day you're worrying about that.
Jack in the Box always tastes better after victory. Yeah.
That's a great t-shirt right there.
We're going to be selling those any day soon. But let's get back to you're going to be down at Comic-Con too.
Very excited. I'm for the last like 3 or 4 years I've been going to Comic-Con. I've been hired by sponsors to do stuff, but this time I'm doing the Madhouse, which is a really great comedy club in San Diego. There's two clubs there. There's the American Comedy Company,
right.
And then there's the Madhouse. They're like really close together, but they're both great, and it's like one of the most beautiful areas of the world is San Diego.
Oh, come on, Gaslamp is so great. I love
it. Not just the weather, but the people walking around. You're like, gorgeous. This is a deep gene pool right here.
Yeah. And you're not in show business.
Yeah, it's so great, right?
It's like, oh, I work in accounting. Where? At a hottie convention? Like, what do you...
That's why they're always like, oh, man, Comic-Con's getting too big for San Diego. We might have to move it. I'm like, if you move it, you really ruin what makes that particular Comic-Con so great, which is the incredibly gorgeous locals dressed up like your favorite comic book character.
Yeah.
It's the best time
ever.
Literally,
like you're like some girls like or guy is just selling like frozen yogurt in the gas lamp and they're just like, you should be like running a country because you're that good looking.
War should happen for you.
You.
Two dudes running country should be fighting over your love.
Yes. Someone should hide in a wooden horse to get you back from
you
another
need to
country.
Walk into the CW and go, my series.
Yeah, exactly.
When it starts today.
Like, I don't know why LA doesn't just go to find talent down there.
And a lot of them are like, oh, I don't like LA and I don't want to do show business.
Well, what Comic-Con has finally done is that, because there's nowhere to expand, there's water. So what they've done now is they started doing programming all in the surrounding hotels and areas. Like Petco Park now is a huge installations there to put stuff in. Yeah. And also like the hotels, you need badges to go into certain stuff in the hotels now that are next to the convention center because Comic-Con had nowhere else to go. It had to just start absorbing all the surrounding areas.
No, that's just all of Southern Cal is just completely developed. It's like, where do you go? You know, but they have to find a way to build that convention center better. They're like, let's move to LA. I'm like, it would not be the same thing.
If you, you could move it to LA Live. You'd have plenty of space. It would be fun, but it wouldn't be San Diego.
Well, yeah, it has that San Diego flavor to it.
Yeah. And San Diego's economy would crumble.
Yeah, big time.
Like, this has to be 50% of their revenue.
It's a huge part. It's like that and the military. That's the two big things where they make their money.
Mm-hmm.
And the weather. That's it. Yeah. But it's like those two things.
And just... SeaWorld.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
That's rough, right?
All right, well, cool. So, guys, go down to Comic-Con and
if you guys are there and you want to do a set, let me know.
All right.
Cool.
I know you guys will be going around to different parties probably, but if you get bored and you want to do a quick set, come up.
This is very ironic. We might be going to Michael Bay's party on Friday night.
Rick Meyers invited us. He's having a show on the USS Midway.
Yeah, for the last ship.
For the last
ship. It's a television show.
Really?
He produces. And I was like, Chris and I had to have a discussion about
this. We did.
I'm like, I go, it's Michael Bay.
But it is an aircraft
it's
carrier.
It's not an aircraft yeah. carrier. That's fucking pretty badass.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You wouldn't go to a Michael Bay thing? I mean, like, I maybe because you guys are, like, movie purists, but...
We are. We're very opposed to
him. I like things that go boom, and I like all that stuff.
Yeah, but there's a million...
All the time?
All the...
No, not all the time.
I can give you a list of movies to watch that had boom popcorn that right. aren't
that
dumb,
were
that aren't
yeah.
insulting. Anyway,
I would go see. I don't know. I'm just weird like that.
Yeah, we're. I know. We're going. We're. You've had a butthole competition on your show.
That's so true.
That's where you're coming.
That
from.
Is so true. I wear with a badge of honor.
The mayor of Butthole Town.
I'll take it.
So anyway, that's what we're doing out of Comic-Con. So if you're down in the San Diego area, come to the convention on Thursday. Come to Rick Meyerson. Go see Sam at Madhouse Comedy Friday, Saturday.
It's going
to
be a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
It's always a great time. All right, let's talk some movies.
Yes. Now, The Purge Anarchy. I didn't get a chance to see it. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about
okay.
it. I'm excited about it.
I have a lot. I mean, this movie... Okay, when we discussed the first one, which whatever, came out a year ago maybe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the thing we said about the first one was... Great intention of social commentary.
Right.
Low budget, $3 million. They shot it in 3 weeks at that house.
I remember another reviewer saying The Purge had a lot on its mind, but not a lot to say.
Yeah, it just, yeah, exactly.
That's a great quote.
Yeah. Right. Isn't that great? And so we kept talking about when the first one came out about, oh man, they hinted at this and hinted at that. I wish they had more money.
Right.
Well, they did. And I think this film... It takes place in downtown L.A.
Mm-hmm.
It starts a couple hours before, and everyone's scrambling around. And I think they really handled the social commentary. They alluded to it. Obviously, that's the theme of the first
right.
one. That's the theme of this world where the Purge exists.
Which is like a couple hours of just...
12 hours, do whatever you want, and that...
No laws.
No laws.
And that thins the herd and all that yeah. stuff, and...
Keeps the crime rate down.
Did they do like
get
that?
It out of your system?
Yeah.
You got 12. Get the raping out. Get it out.
Did they do,
be cool after that? Just get it out.
Did they do that great like kind of voiceover montage where they talk about like if you're a certain political level, you're exempt.
You're exempt.
Yeah.
Certain weapons aren't allowed. You know, class this and this aren't allowed. Like they do that whole thing, the lead up to it, which it already tells you it's not. Fair.
Right.
Certain politicians are exempt from it. It's not fair. And as they alluded to in the first one, it's really about getting rid of poor people.
Yeah. I mean, the Purge to me is just like, what if America was a third world country? That's really all it is. Like this is Brazil. This is like everything in mm-hmm. really poor parts of Eastern Europe, you know, just where it's like rich people get to do what they want and poor people just shank each other and just... Women disappear mysteriously. And then,
sorry.
Yeah.
And well, that's it's funny you bring up Brazil because leading up to the World Cup, they were just sending out military units
oh, yeah.
through the favelas.
Yeah.
Just like cleaning house. And it was like, well, these guys are poor. Nobody knows who they are. We'll fucking take them out. And that's what a lot of the protests, a lot of Brazilians were like, this is bullshit. And, you know, having... Known a lot of Brazilians and hearing that they were like and they would tell me that I'm like no that's not true they're like no Graham that's what happens
oh yeah they used to hunt like homeless kids
yes
there was a group of like some like cops who decided to go rogue and they would just hunt homeless kids
yeah.
It's crazy that's really what the Purge is
and honestly that's what they're saying and you know America let's be honest is a racist violent country. Like, we want to think that it isn't, but it is.
But I would also say that I think just the earth is a racist, sure. violent place.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like America, you know, but there's a lot of places
right.
where, like, I mean, you watch some, like, football games on the pitch and they're making monkey sounds when the guy's, you know, kicking.
Guy
yeah,
the ball.
It's just like. It's just people are just crazy like
right,
that.
Right.
It's just it's horrible.
It is. Yeah. It is.
You can turn on the TV and watch the human race de-evolve at any time,
at any moment, anywhere around
we just
the planet.
Have shinier toys. That's all.
Right. Exactly. No, that's a great way to put it. And this movie, man. So this young couple is going to the store a couple hours beforehand,
and they break down. Right. That's in the trailer.
Well, yeah, they break down, but it's like there's this group of young guys. This movie does a pretty decent job, I thought, of if it actually happened,
this
like,
is what it would be
this
like.
This is what it would be like. Like, really, today, if this were to happen today, this is what it would be like. And you see these young guys with these fucking crazy faces and face paint and masks, and they're like, yeah. And it's like, this is horrifying. You know, I'm in the theater looking around going, how many people in here would be like...
just going crazy?
And I'm just like... you know, violent, the whole, like, get it out of your system is so, it doesn't, and what this movie is saying is it doesn't work. Violence begets more violence.
Yeah, 100%.
There's no two ways about it. And so this movie shows, you know, and they even say, they're like, oh no, we're near downtown, and that's where everybody comes to purge. Well, if you live in LA like we do, I mean, obviously in the last 10, 15 years, they've made downtown LA a lot better than it was.
Oh, way better.
So much better.
But when, like 15 years ago?
It's horrifying.
It was horrifying, dude.
Now, do they go into like the, like that kind of like propaganda and the politics of like, look at all the good the Purge does. Yes. They do like, look, crime rates are down. Yes. It's a good thing. And
they have that actor, Dick Dye, who was ex-military, who's been a military consultant, a million military movies. He's been in every movie. If you guys Google him, go on IMDb, you'll see him and go, oh, I've seen this guy in a million military movies. He always plays like some, hey man, officer. He's the president. And they just show him on TV talking about, and he says these little subtle things, which I thought were very interesting and well done by the filmmakers. He's like, when my regime was voted in, and there's this like hint of like, how you know, what kind of election?
The word regime right there lets you know something right there.
They didn't, it wasn't a Democratic election.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean?
And when I won 99% of the vote,
yeah,
because only 99% of the people who would vote for me were allowed to vote. Yeah. That's basically what you're saying.
Exactly. And so there's that, and then there's you see like these, you know, two young women and the middle class and poor are like, they're all like, okay, stay safe, stay safe. That's what they're all saying to each other. And they go home and they make they have a barricade, but it's not the high end that the rich people have.
Yeah.
And then the guy breaks in and he's like, I saved money for this barricade buster gun. So, and they talk about that. And then there's, and this guy's this average Joe working, but on Purge Day, he's like crazy. He's like, it's my fucking right.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, this is awful.
Which is I believe in the right to bear arms, but the whole notion, that's the same thing with guns. Like, more guns were safer. No, there are places on this on this planet where everybody has a gun. Like,
Afghanistan.
Everywhere.
It's not safe.
Rwanda, there's no safety. Everybody with guns, when did that begin? We used to have that. It was called the Wild West, right? And you imagine what traffic would be right now if there was every 2 seconds there was a draw at noon, and you're just like, can't go that way. There, two dudes are shooting it out.
It's math. If that were true, this would be the safest country on earth with the amount of guns we have per capita of people.
Right. It's not.
It's not.
And and they talk about the economics of it. There's young girl is watching on the internet. There's this underground anti-purge movement. And they're like, we're sick. It's for rich people to kill poor people. Because they said, you know, that everyone goes downtown LA to purge. Well, we also know even today, as much better as downtown LA is, there's still a lot of homeless people down there. And so basically that's what this new regime did was, oh, we're going to get rid of the undesirables.
You could see that happening. You know, I've lived in LA for about 13 years. And you could see where they systematically move people out of an area.
Was it kind of subsidized a little bit, like in the movie, where it was like, well, you know, if it's your duty to kind of go and clear out these areas, and then, you know, you get like a voucher or anything like
that? No, it's not even that. It's your duty to purge, and then here are all these things you can buy. Like, they really went more into the economics of it. I mean, they did that in the first one of, like, he's rich because he's been selling security systems.
Right.
So now it's like, well, you need this security system and you need this gun. And, well, this gun is, you know, like, it's this escalation.
Y2K.
Yeah.
Y2K. Oh, man, everything's going to blow up. If you don't buy this program, save your computer, everything's going to be lost.
And you need canned goods and water, and it's going to be a bunch of hillbillies running around.
Big business.
1 minute after.
And that's what they do. And that's and so there's this underground movement that's like, this is bullshit, and they're showing the, you know, videos of this is the money being made.
It's good for the economy. If we take this away, we're hurting the job creators.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's it. If you don't purge, people aren't going to have jobs.
And that's they get more into that. I mean, look at this country. Every time there's a school shooting and it's in the news, gun sales go up.
For two reasons.
Yeah.
One of them is that fear, you can't protect yourself unless you have a gun.
Yeah.
Or the Democrats are going to take your guns away. You better buy them now.
100%.
So. Yeah. And so
that's exactly what it is.
And the gun industry is doing great. And this movie just kind of says, well, here's where we could potentially go. And this is what it would actually be. And, you know, it's
great science fiction, these movies. I mean, they're
it would never happen.
And they're little, like, they're marketed as horror movies, and they put those hooks that aren't necessarily necessary as horror movies. They're really science fiction movies because
this is complete science fiction. This is like, and it's weird. It's funny you say that. Every trailer before it was a horror movie,
right?
And now it's that they horror movies now all have the same trailer. By the way,
yeah,
100%. Hot chick,
yeah, hot chick, and then they fast cut, silence.
Some crazy Asian jumps out of nowhere,
or just the creepy kid with the scar across their face.
So meow meow meow, you know, some weird animal.
Or it's a mirror.
You see the demon in the mirror. Like I saw the same trailer four in a row. But anyway, you were saying that this is science fiction.
Yeah, it really is because it satisfies all those requirements of what if, what would happen, and let's watch to the actual conclusion of this idea. And that's what you get to see in these
movies.
Can I ask,
when you looked around at the crowd, what was the demographics?
It was everybody.
So when I saw it, there was like just me and a couple people.
And were they wearing masks?
And they all looked like me. And we were just like, well, we're the same creepy people. But when you were there, what was the demographic? I see usually these horror films, women love these horror films.
Well, this, again, I don't know that I would call this a horror movie, and I think the way it's been marketed, and I heard two guys behind me talking who had obviously seen the first one, and they were kind of having a similar discussion of, oh, wow, they had a bigger budget, they could do more. Like, we were in, the whole movie, you're in downtown LA, and the streets are, like, they did some cool stuff. And they showed you, like, they said stuff, oh, didn't you know that's how the rich purge? They just pay, like, Sam, I get to kill you and I'll give your family $100,000.
What?
And you'll come to my mansion where I'm protected. So I don't have to go out and risk anything on purge night, but I get to fucking kill. And you see the rich family in a circle praying. We, the founding fathers, they show the religious component, like, oh, religion.
Again.
You know, it's like, you know, Chris, you and I were raised Catholic, that whole like, do whatever you want. Just go in the confessional booth and a couple of Hail Marys and you're good.
Wash your hands.
And so they really did a lot of that. Now, structurally as a film, there's a couple predictable things in there.
Sure.
But I gotta say, they really did a great job in terms of just what a sequel can be.
Now, would you say it's better than the first one and more focused?
It's better, more focused. And shows you, like, they didn't have the money in the first one to show you. You just saw the cameras, like, oh, we're going to watch some Purge feeds. This, you were in it.
Sometimes, it's so interesting when there's a movie that's kind of indie, then it gets the big budget. And, like, sometimes it can make the jump, and sometimes, like, Blair Witch, they weren't able to go anywhere. But this one, they definitely were able to make a nice jump.
And I don't think this was a giant jump in budget. It was probably... It
went from 3 to probably 10 or 15
million.
Yeah,
something like that. It's not like it went to like...
Yeah, you know, like a Michael Bay.
Or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The Purge Plosions.
Robot Purge.
Yeah.
Purge in space.
Purgency. It is... Yeah, exactly. The budget is estimated at $9 million. So it went from 3 to 9. But it brought in $30 million. And I think you, again, and they did, this one was interesting too. No huge stars.
Right.
No
big you don't names. Need
just
them.
Really good looking people.
No. They cast it really well.
Really?
They did it. They had, I mean, the lead guy was definitely like, lead guy, good looking. But they had some cute people, but they had like, they did a good job of casting like, what
right
every because they're really showing the poor in the middle class.
Maybe I have lower standards, you know. I just think just everybody's good looking.
My six is your 10.
Yeah. I grew up in upstate New York, man. We got to pick. We're lucky to get a 4 or 5. some unattractive people up that way. But that's what I had to pick from.
So yeah, I would say if you were intrigued or at least kind of like the first one, I think you should really see this one, because I came out of it and it was physically like, wow. It did its job.
You were ready to kill somebody.
Oh, I couldn't wait to the purge someone.
Did you grab your samurai sword?
You're right.
Taking out the trash. It's my right. No, I was literally the next day. When I'm home, I practice my samurai sword every morning on my roof. The next morning, I was like, no, I don't want a weapon in my hand, because I was just too creeped out by that whole concept of like looking around going, some of my neighbors are murderers. 364 days a year, they're nice and let me help. Okay, hey, thank you. And I'm going to church. But this purge day justifies me to act like the worst. And I really, the filmmakers did a good job.
Oh, good.
Showing it was a class issue. Like the rich get to take advantage of it.
100%, man.
They did a really good job.
It was great.
So anyway, that's that.
So let's talk about Snowpiercer.
Let's do it.
Now, so interesting.
It's really... Now that you're talking about The Purge, a fair amount of the same themes actually are hit on in Snowpiercer.
Right.
Because
it takes place in the future.
It takes place in the future. The interesting setup is that everyone's worried about global warming. Yeah. So they put a chemical into the atmosphere to cool things down, but it cools things down too much, and it freezes the planet. Right. So the only surviving humans are on this train that circles the globe.
And snow dogs.
And snow dogs, yeah. And then they know it's...
This is a Disney.
Yeah.
And they know it's a new year. They go, Happy New Year, when they cross like a certain bridge every year, because they know they've circled the Earth and it's been a year. So that's how they kind of tell time. Okay. So when So... Here's the thing about this movie. I liked it. It's good. However, I don't want to oversell it, because if I say it's like amazing or fantastic and you see it, you're like, well, it was good, but it wasn't like the best science fiction movie ever. It definitely had some weird quirks to it. But here's the thing about it. It was an amazing vision and an amazing way it came together. Everything from it's like a French graphic novel, a Korean director. They shot it like in Prague, and
the
cast
UN.
Is from. Yeah, literally, it is the UN. The cast is literally
it's the
from
World
all
Cup
over
of
the
movies.
World. Yeah, it is, and it was not funded in LA. It was independently funded overseas, and one of the screenwriters was American, so that wrote it with the Korean director.
It is based on a French graphic
novel,
correct?
Yes, and the Korean director is the director of The Host,
which is. Really good.
A good monster movie.
Monster movie, and has really good social commentary.
Yes. So I'm watching this movie and I'm looking at it, and as I'm watching it, I'm realizing, oh, this is satire. The way he set it up is it's like the original RoboCop, where it's the extreme violence, it's the class system, it's, you know, poor versus rich, and how everybody has their place, everything has their place, and they hammer those themes in over and over and over again. And some of the times they do it in a really like almost like broadly comedic way that's almost like it's a cultural thing, because you've got a Korean director and you're trying to hit like satire, so it doesn't always come across. It sometimes it comes across as too goofy, like Tilda Swinton's character, like with the weird teeth.
Do you think it got in the way?
It definitely got in the way.
A foreign director?
No, that it was that it wasn't sure like if it wanted to be satire, commentary, or just like a goofy kind of comedic scene that. Like it really, it went a little bit all over the map. But the way, as I was watching this movie, the overall package is great. It's just, it's got these little weird quirks with story and characters and scenes, like just little stuff here and there. Like to give you an example, one of the things is that as you're learning about these characters, as they're going through the train, it's almost like, you know, The Raid, as they're going through each train car. You learn a little bit about the characters, but you don't learn a lot until the end. Like, the end is so top-heavy with exposition and speeches. You can't have every character make a speech at the end of the movie. You can't do
Security
that.
Security guard one.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here to tell you that the martial arts kid stands for what we all should stand for.
Now it's your turn for a speech. So, yeah, and they just loaded it up at the end. Like, no, everyone should not be doing backstory and speeches at the end of the movie. Mix that up. Put something in the middle.
My father told me you will become security guard number one if you live a path of righteousness.
So that,
suddenly I had an accent.
Conclusion. The back exits are closed if you have to leave.
So
use the front entrance.
So there was a couple of like really like weird, quirky things like that about the movie. But here's the amazing thing about this movie. You could tell it was such a self-contained vision of the director. Like there's no way you could note that movie. There was no notes. There was no meddling. There was nothing. He got this financed independently. He made the movie he wanted to make. And then I was reading too, he shot his edit, which means that's really ballsy, which means he only shot the scenes he was going to use for the movie. And that means he shot no coverage. And that means when he got into the editing room, if there was something wrong or he had to change a scene, there was no footage to cut to.
Really?
Yeah. So that was an unbelievably ballsy thing to do.
Is that ballsy, crazy, or stupid?
It's a combination of those things.
Did he have no money?
No. No, he had the money. I think it was a choice because he storyboarded it so meticulously.
Did he do what Pauly Shore does when he gets a project? Keeps most of it and only use a little bit on the actual production of the show?
I'm going to guess no, because Chris Evans needed to get paid. And,
let me
and
ask
John
you
Hurt
are
and
you
Ed
saying
Harris.
You'd like to The Purge, Pauly Shore?
Body, what's up? Boom! No, I love Pauly. My question is, like, here's what comes with me in movies. Because they've gotten so expensive to go see now. It's like your room for error is so much smaller now. You can't just be like, it may be good, it may be bad, but it's $5. Let's just go see a movie. Right, now it's exactly. Like... okay, I'm bringing a day. I got, buying all this. I'm going to be 30, 40, 50 bucks in this thing. I want to hit it on the head. Exactly. I want to knock it out of the park.
And that's not including if you pay a babysitter. Then after that, it's like another 30, 40, sometimes $50 if you had dinner. But one thing I did like about this movie is that it was on demand. So you could actually, it was in theaters and on demand at the same time.
That's so interesting.
So I could actually watch it.
Does that work out? Do they
ever? You know what? It does sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the movie. Like, for a movie like this, on demand is essential for this movie because it's not going to be playing in every movie theater, and there's a high demand for it because it's also a genre film. Anything science fiction, horror, does a lot better on an on-demand kind of thing. Now, this movie, like I said, I liked it. I thought the movie really was... I would say brought to another level by the acting. I mean, Chris Evans did a really nice job. I mean, you've got even, I think somebody was from The Help. I think was it, I can't remember. There was a girl from The Help. She was great. John Hurt was in it. Octavia Spencer. Yeah, she did an amazing job. And, you get into all these things about class and know your place and, oh, you were born in the back of the train. Why would you even think you could come to the front of the train?
Oh, that's so interesting. Social. Now, hierarchy based now the thing card is, number.
Cool. The thing that was interesting was that I think in the graphic novel there was something like hundreds of train cars, like tons of train cars, but you couldn't show that in a movie. But what I loved is seeing like the different train cars. Like one was like an aquarium where they would have seafood, and there was a sushi bar, and it was like the aquarium train, and then there was one was the restaurant. One had a pool in it, like as you were walking forward. But the ones in the back were all like, they're all like just the tiny little cars that all the poor people huddled into.
Yeah.
Like the bottom of the Titanic. That's what they made it look like.
Where were the tranny hookers? We were donut time train car.
Donut time.
There, I think they purged that one, I think they went through. Okay. But there was a lot of like little weird quirks. You really get here's the thing about this movie. You really got to suspend disbelief, and you really got to just kind of overlook a lot of these like niggling little details. Like, oh well, there are a lot of soldiers in the beginning. Why are there no soldiers near the engine, which is the most critical part of the train, like things like that. But you just got to let that go and just enjoy it.
You have to sometimes
because if you're already on board with a train that circles the globe and the last of humanity is in it, you got to let the other stuff go.
100%.
So but it was the kind of movie that you're glad it got made. It was completely made outside any type of studio system, and it was also made. It was almost like the trains themselves kind of pieced together from like good actors, different countries, different funding, and it was a real kind of like global effort.
I'm curious about is according to IMDb, the budget on it was like close to $40 million, and it didn't do I mean, it's only made like $3 or $4 million here.
Right.
So I'm wondering, A, what it's going to do internationally, which it might have a, it might have better pull internationally.
It's definitely going to start doing better internationally. And again, here, it's there's no advertising. You right. really have to know anything about genre and movies or go to Comic-Con to know Snowpiercer was coming out. And the
it
other
didn't
thing
get
is,
a wide release at all.
No, no. And it will make money on demand. But it's, yeah, it's the kind of movie that's going to live or die through word of mouth.
Yep. Is there going to be a good word of mouth, you think?
I think it will be, yes. Yeah, like I said, it's there's those, on the whole, it's actually a really fun, good science fiction movie. It's just you got to ignore some of these details. And you're willing to do it. I mean, if you're on board, you're on board. You're gonna let a lot of that stuff slide.
So you ever watch a movie with somebody who can't follow a movie? And then there's a lot of that movie magic. And they're like, why would this? I don't know why it's happening. It just, it's in the movie. Okay, it's movie magic. Just accept this magical place. Like Ray Donovan does that a lot in the TV show. But right. my girlfriend never can follow anything. So I have to explain everything as we go. And then something that makes no sense whatsoever will happen. And then it's like explaining to a child why the sky is blue. You know, it's, it just is. It is. I don't know why. But this is how it works out.
So you have to watch a movie with like Wikipedia up on the iPad.
100%. Because I wanted to ask you guys watch a lot of movies, but you also have to kind of like take notes at the same time. Right. You can't go, hey, hold on, stop. Let me write this down. So you guys, it's got to be really hard to follow. And or do you guys just keep it in your head?
I keep it in my head. I don't write. I don't write
that while I'm watching.
Here's what I usually do. I
see, look stuff up on IMDb.
I look up stuff when I get home. I'll do, maybe look up who did this or if I didn't know going in. But a lot of things that I will do is if I see the movie with a friend, immediately we'll have a conversation about it and I'll kind of put my thoughts together because that's what this is. This is just like a conversation. So I'll do it that way or I'll call someone or something and kind of – I sort of view it like how I do stand-up. I'll think of something in my head –
And just riff it on stage?
Riff it on stage.
Stage right.
Yeah.
I'm big on that, too.
Yeah.
If I overthink the joke by the time I get on stage, it's almost stale to me, and I can't. Mm-hmm. I like to, yeah, so that's interesting.
So I just kind of, like, as the movie's going, sometimes in my head I'll be like, well, how am I going to talk about this on the show? And I'll be like, oh, I'm going to say this and that, and it's going to remind me of this or whatever. So, all right.
Cool.
Let's do, we'll do one more.
Okay.
We'll do one more film. I saw Begin Again. The Mark Ruffalo, Keira Knightley indie film, which is directed by John Carney, who did that other cool kind of similarly themed Once. This is a nice little movie. It's a nice little...
Is it a romantic comedy or is it more of a drama?
I think it's more of a drama. It definitely has funny parts in it. Mark Ruffalo plays like he was like a big-time music executive who's kind of fallen on hard times. He's a little bit of a fuck-up.
Does he have a train?
It does have a train, and the train, he has to play a guitar to keep the train going. Otherwise, the rich people kill him. So it's really great. It's a really solid movie.
So, Free Bird, let's go.
Exactly. There's that guy on the train. It's a cool little thing. It takes place in New York, and Keira Knightley is I love her when she's in movies like this. When she's in a gown in the 1600s running around. Going,
when she's fighting people, I'm like, you're...
Yeah,
I do a joke about her. It's like the only thing she's fighting is anorexia. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, you see her swinging swords. It's like, there's no way that's really happening.
There's no way.
Yeah, that's swords made out of paper.
Yeah. I love Mark Ruffalo. I think he's a really great actor. I think his career is great. I always get told we have the same voice. Like, we sound exactly the same. But I love his career because he'll do, like, The Incredible Hulk.
Sure.
In a big movie. And then he'll do movies like this.
I think he's one of those guys who just... loves acting
and great at it,
and he's really good at it, and he'll okay, you come with me with this Avengers, yeah, of course I'll take that payday.
And who doesn't want to play Hulk?
Yeah, who doesn't want right, of course exactly. You'd say yes to that, but then I can go to New York for 4 or 5 weeks and do this really cool little indie film,
yeah,
that's also kind of it's a little bit of a love story to Manhattan,
yeah,
the way they make this new album, and it's, again, this is where I love Keira Knightley, is in roles like this where she's just playing like an English chick in New York that's a musician and playing that sort of, you know,
delicate flower almost.
Kind of like strong, but then insecure about things and kind of, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know. Like she really pulled that off. And then when her character is like, no, I really want to do this. This is what I believe. It's believable because you're like, you know, you believe that Keira Knightley is going to be, has a strength to her.
Yeah.
It's
like a tough will.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Can she pick up a sword? And yeah. I don't know.
She could go bounty hunting on people.
Yeah. I don't know that.
How do you think she'd do in The Purge, by the way? Why is this waif model swinging swords at us?
I think she would have to release the beast, Sam. Yeah. Then she'd have to get out there and get some of that English rage going. But it's a cool little film. I think it's got kind of a, not a totally wide release, obviously, but it's if you can see it in the theater, it's great. If it's not playing in your town, look for it when it comes on video on demand. Right.
Are these movies passion projects, would you say? Like,
I think so.
Like, are the goals of movies like this necessarily to, just because someone loves the story? It's such an interesting thing with movies. Like,
Snowpiercer definitely was like that. He said he fell in love with the graphic novel while he was making The Host. Mm-hmm. So
I think, you know, yeah, I think that especially,
the goal to make money or just break even at this point?
I think, well, my opinion or what I can
get. The goal of the investor is to make money.
But I think what they do with the film like this, yes, it is a passion project. I don't think they're going into break even. I think they go in and they say, low budget, we'll give, you know, Mark and Keira are huge names. We'll give them big back end points and we'll make this for a lower budget. And everyone goes in going, yeah.
Yeah, the budget's critical. That's just what you're saying.
You keep the budget low. You make this movie for $5 million. It could do 10, 15. No one's going to get rich off of it. But I think, too, especially people like Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo, who are like, at least from what I can gather from their career choices, they like acting.
Yes.
And I think if you pitch to them and you say, hey, between this giant project and that giant project, will you guys come to Manhattan for 4 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, like when I actually, a couple years ago, I had a meeting at James Cameron's company. It was a Lightstorm Entertainment, and it was right after Solaris had come out, the George Clooney movie, and they were telling me about how angry the studio was and all this stuff for that very reason, because you have this low budget science fiction artsy movie that just happened to cost $80 million yeah. because of all the bloated salaries and the systems and stuff.
Interesting.
And it's like, and they said, you know, we can't throw money away like that on, you know, the small type of stories. If this, like, if you would have remade Solaris, it's a Russian science fiction movie, if you would have remade it for $4 million, and you could have, it takes place all in a space station, you could have easily have like kind of a cool, fun, you know, science fiction movie, but when as soon as you have an $80 million write down,
yeah. Well, that movie isn't about the special effects.
Exactly,
it's a human
exactly.
story. It takes place in space. Being in space is part yes. of it. But you, like you said, you could have done that on a sound stage.
Yeah, easily.
Shot it in a month
with much smaller salaries.
Yeah.
And the
someone lost their job with that decision.
Yeah, yeah.
I think and multiple.
The problem is the
I think they did The Purge. At
yeah,
that
they definitely did The Purge after that. The problem with that is damage gets done, and the wrong kind of damage. If someone that greenlit that got fired, fine. But the takeaway is always, oh well, we can't make in, you know, small movies like this anymore. Yeah, you can. Yeah. You can make them all the time.
Just for the right budget.
Just for the right budget. Exactly. It's not, the material is not the problem.
You know who does
it's
the that?
Accounting.
It's television, but IFC is really good at that. I feel like they're great at taking stuff, be like, you're a big name, but we'll give you a show, but it's going to be a lower budget and you could do what you want to do, where maybe a show that on IFC would die on NBC
sure.
because right, it would exactly. never get those kind of numbers. Right. But it's better to give them a lower budget, let them do what they want to do. Yeah.
It's there's so many examples of, and you can tell that the production companies, the filmmakers and the actors, when they all go into it knowing low budget, we know this isn't going to make $200 million at the box office, but if we keep the budget low, we have a little money for marketing, we can turn a profit on this, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? And I think especially the numbers are so inflated in Hollywood that tell me any other business where if I came to you and said, let's spend $5 million and we bring back 10, you'd go,
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, that's the biggest problem in Hollywood. It just, they don't understand small ball. It's a baseball.
Yeah.
Small ball.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with small ball. Get a single. Get a double. Not wrong. Keep moving. Score. Everything's got to be grand slams. Yeah. And it's like, you're going to be swinging. You're going to be missing on
yes.
a lot.
You're trying to tell me a $5 million profit, a 100% return on your money is not, that's bad?
Yeah.
Like, what do you talk? Like, you know, you do any other investment, you get 5% return on investment. It's like, yeah, wow.
Anything over 4%, you're like, this is great.
But Hollywood, you have to make $1 billion or...
That's Bernie Madoff, you know.
Money you're making there.
But if you don't, you're a complete failure. Anyway.
It's so interesting. They should just have little departments of these giant studios. Whole job is to make $4 or $5 million movies. They're going to make them $10, $15 million
profit.
They used
to. They shuttered them. Yeah, they used to have, like, when the big indie boom was happening, like in the 90s, every division had like a little art, you know, art division, and they were churning out movies every single year. They started calling them stindies because they were indie movies, but they were funded by the studios just at lower budgets, and then that all kind of collapsed. Now it's just micro budgets or Avengers.
Well, the thing
it's
is, though,
hard to get that mid-range budget anymore.
What hopefully is starting to happen, though, with movies like Begin Again, and even you talked about it with Snowpiercer, is there's a digital life for this movie,
yes,
to where it can make a profit.
Bring video back on the demand, $10 to $40 million budget.
Right, exactly. Like you just talked about, you want to go to the movies with your date. It's $40 or $50, or you could just download it for $7.
Yeah,
and eat and order in. You know what I mean? Or make your own food, and all of a sudden, this date night is it's $20.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel that people love going to the movies.
It is
no question.
It is a cool thing, and so, but again,
people love to get. I mean, like you guys are stand-up comics. You know, it's like you guys know that if you go to a cold area, and it's winter, the place is gonna be packed. But if you go in there in spring and summer, those people have cabin fever. They don't want to come back in. People like to get out of the house, and even though going inside to see a movie is still going inside, it's still getting out of their
house. Your own house.
Right. Especially when you've been stuck inside because it's been a long winter.
100%.
And I think some people are figuring this out, though. I think indie filming, these indie studios now are like Judd Apatow had something to do with his production company, and all these other smaller production companies helped make Begin Again. And because I was looking at the credits and I'm looking at IMDb right now, and I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. And they're all going, well, we could get... With Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley, we can get distribution in theaters, and we can make some money on video on demand and all this stuff. So I think there's a, because everything is changing in this digital world now, as we're people who are making money from our podcasts, that I think there's room for more of these movies are starting to get a little, and all you need to now, okay, you don't have a $40 million marketing budget, just get people buzzing about it online. You know what I mean? And I think that's like...
There's publicists now that only do online.
Yeah.
They only do social marketing and online.
All right.
All right. Well, let's talk about... We do have an ad read to do today. And this exciting. Is one of the Kickstarter ads from Earbuds. And we want to tell you guys to listen to the Cyber Babble podcast on iTunes. Now, this is an Australian podcast. And this Rowan Cook and Tim Petrovic run this podcast, and Rowan was nice enough to donate. He actually did the ad read extreme over $700 pledge.
Dude,
thank you so much to and we want to talk about his podcast. Now, these guys are really busy. I looked at their podcast. They don't release all the time because they're busy doing videos and other stuff, and the podcast is described as a random talking about the world random talking about the world's issues and other stuff. So it's a very broad podcast, and I was looking at some of the stuff that they talk about. They talk about everything from movies to their stories about being in school to Sonic the Hedgehog. So they go everything. They talk about pretty much a pop culture type podcast.
And kind of what we were just talking about in terms of this new digital economy, like this is really cool. These guys have this podcast in Australia. They supported Earbuds, which was completely funded by fans and podcasters. And one of the things they're getting out of it is now us spreading the word about their podcast. And we know you guys that listen, you like hearing about a new podcast.
Absolutely.
Or an indie film or whatever. So this is a cool thing. Go give it a listen. Check these guys out, you know, and Australia, and we have a lot of fans that listen in Australia. I'm sure you do too.
Oh, Sam. Yeah. I love when people who, let's say, not live in New York or LA, they do their own little podcast because they just have a passion for producing their own art. And I think it's so cool. So I'll get a call from them, hey, can you do my podcast? I'll do hey, dude, you want me to come on your podcast? You're in Houston, you're in Tennessee, I think that's so cool. Instead of being like, I got to get on the road, I got to find a way to get people to follow me, which is cool too. But it's also cool when you're just doing it for the love of the game. You know what I'm saying?
That's the beauty of it. And the other thing, too, I mean, obviously, like, L.A. is sort of, you know, the birthplace of comedy podcasts.
Would you say it's the hub pub or whatever we're saying?
I would say the hub. I would say that. I would call it the hub of comedy podcasting.
I feel like way more than New York City. I feel like New York City is doing it, but never with the passion that L.A. was. Well, I think New York City does do it, but not like
that. They do it, and I think...
And there's a lot more places to do live performance in New York, too. It's a different
performers
kind of
are
feel
respected
to it.
In New York more.
Yeah.
Well, I think, yeah, a lot of podcasts in L.A. came from the need to survive.
Right. That we were like, oh, I'm getting one set a week at best. It's 10 minutes. New York, you can do 2-3 sets a night. You can actually make some money, you know, and people go out and support shows. In New York, it's like, I'll pay $30 to see a show. L.A., it's like, ugh, $5.
New York is like a road gig in a big city, meaning there's a whole bunch of people who live there who aren't in the entertainment business, who just want to be entertained.
Yeah.
Here, everybody's in the entertainment business.
Right.
Yeah, so no one wants to pay for a show.
No, I can't get... nobody buys tickets.
Yeah.
Everyone's VIP out here, you know?
Your guest list when you do a show in LA is like...
It's longer than the amount of seats you have.
Fuck, man.
It drives me crazy.
It's insane. And I think that's one of the reasons why LA became sort of the hub. But which is why then... And you know, New York comics are doing, there are more New York podcasts and stuff like this. But the thing I like about these shows, like this one in Australia, is they're not coming at it from showbiz, New York, LA, or whatever. You know what I mean?
They're just love.
They're two friends that want to talk about stuff.
These guys want to talk about stuff. So check it out. Check out Rowan and Tim.
Yes.
Rowan and Tim.
Once again, on iTunes, it is called... The Cyber Babble Podcast, and you can
Cyber
get it on iTunes.
Babble on iTunes.
Great
guys.
Name.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. It's a cool thing, and it's what this medium is all about. You're anywhere in the world, you want to plug a microphone into your laptop, fucking go for
Anyone
it.
Anyone can hear it.
Anyone can hear it.
I love it.
All right, so Sam, talk to you. You got a new album coming out.
It just came out. It came out in May, late May. It's called Believe in Yourself, and
it's very
it did
positive
really well.
Message.
Yeah, it's if you listen to the whole CD, you totally get it. And it's basically, it came out, got number 2 in America on iTunes, number 1 in Canada. And I really love it. The feedback has been great. You know, I kind of made a mistake. I didn't put out a lot of CDs. Like, a lot of people I know are doing one a year, one every two years. I waited like five, six years. Right. So it's like a culmination of like, 6 years of like really great stand-up, and it's an hour of power. It's done really well. If you like fun adult comedy, enjoy it. It's a really, I'm really proud of it.
I've done shows with Sam, and dude, you're a blast to perform with and to see you
Thank
on
you.
Stage. It's a guy.
And
like,
the Naughty Show is really fun,
the
too,
Naughty
when we
show,
do that podcast.
I was just, because I've been watching footage the last month of all the interviews we've done, and it's been for earbuds, and it's been awesome. And, you know, we typically, the format was we would interview the podcasters and then shoot them recording their show. Well, we did that with the Naughty Show. And all the other shows, we shoot it and then they set up at their table like we're in a garage or whatever. Sam's like, all right, man, here we go.
Bring in the circus.
This fucking Clownvis, a dude that dresses up as Elvis but wears clown
yeah,
makeup.
Yeah, he's the king of the clowns.
He's the king of the clowns, and he does clown, like Elvis clown jokes between his songs, and he does it really deadpan. He's fucking hilarious.
He's amazingly fast, funny.
He's really sharp. Like, when you told me you're bringing it, I was like, oh, boy. Like, but I was like, no, this cat is sharp.
He's on it.
He knows Elvis front to back and then puts clown jokes in the middle of it. Like, it's fucking brilliant. So you've got that guy on. Then you had...
We had Randall, the honey badger guy, come on, and we talked about all the crazy stuff. And if you've seen his... honey badger don't give a shit.
Right.
That guy came on, and... Because it was Naughty Show, I decided to bring in like this video vixen, this legendary one named Malice, who's like in every music video. Everybody knows her. So I thought it'd be funny because it was an audio podcast we were recording while you guys did your video. Right. We would bring in Randall to do play-by-play of Malice's pole dancing.
it was such a cool thing because it, to me, like... The earbuds experience was so awesome. I learned so much about podcasting, you know, and not really. I mean, we're neck deep in this.
Yeah,
and
we're still learning.
We're still learning. And every interview, people would say stuff, and I go, fuck, you're right. And the thing that was so cool about during your guys' show was the whole, like, podcasting can be whatever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, whatever you want it to be. You want to have Clownvis and a pole dancer and a YouTube sensation?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no committee that has to review it.
There's no
suit going, listen, marketing shows us nobody likes that.
Yeah.
I just love chaos. I want to be Snowpiercer
of every comedian we've ever met.
Sam just embraces it more.
Yeah.
I encourage it.
Yeah.
I throw gasoline on it.
No, you
max.
That.
That's what I like. You know, and that's what I do with my podcast. I just love the thought of just like, you don't know. It's like this train going crazy, and you just pray to God it stays on the tracks. And 99.9% of the time it does. And everyone's like, that was insane. But I want to do something different than you would get anywhere else, even on television.
Example of one time it did go off the tracks?
I mean, there's a million. I mean, we've had girls who came on who are, you know, just quiet.
And they started crying.
Nobody cries. I mean, we had an adult film star on our show. We brought Clownvis on. Turns out she has a huge fear of clowns, and it got really hilariously awkward in there. Like the nicest girl and the nicest guy, and she was just like, where else are you gonna get? It was our big 200th show. We brought in,
she didn't even plan it.
No plan. We just didn't know. As soon as he walked in, she went nuts and she was just freaking out. I was like, this is chaos.
Well, dude, I love the vibe of it because it's chaos, but you still keep it like fun and positive. Like it's not like mean.
Yeah, I definitely try. I don't judge. That's a big, I know it sounds crazy, but I really don't judge because we get some interesting people on the show and I can't judge them because then I'll start racking them and then then it doesn't work. They have to come in here and be very open and free and know that I'm just going to try to get the best out of them.
Right.
And that's really what I want to do. And I just, you know, I got a big show coming up next Tuesday at the Viper Room. It's my rock and pole world championships. It's karaoke and pole dancing tag team. I hooked them up. It is like, it's the old, what's that old, here I go again on my own.
White Snake
video where like he's singing and Tony Katane's just grinding on the cars. Right. That's what I do. I have like the rapper Too Short is a celebrity judge. Steve Rivers from Limp Bizkit, Malice, they're all judging. And I got 10 teams, and they come up, and they're tag team duos, singer, dancer, and they put on a little, like, song. Dude, it is the most entertaining show you will ever watch in your life.
I want to be involved in the next one. Like, I love singing. I have a couple classics. I sing karaoke. Like,
I would team you up with a pole dancer, and together you two will work on two routines that if you were lucky enough to make to the finals, you would do it in the finals.
Okay. How to set me up with the next
one. Here's what I'm doing. So I'm doing this one. Then I'm going through the whole city of Los Angeles. I have like 5 strip bar cabaret bars that want me to hold preliminaries in their clubs. I take the top 2 from each club. They go to the finals.
Oh my God, this is great.
And everyone's like, oh, strippers. I'm telling you, it's so much different than that. It is the most entertaining show you will ever watch in your life.
I'm in. Like, whatever you need me to do for this in any way.
Why isn't this on Bravo?
What I'm going to do is I'm going to shoot this and see if I can get people. Because like people are like, oh, singing shows are going off TV. But this is so much different. It's the most entertaining thing you'll ever see in your life. I got Brad Williams, Tara Patrick's doing burlesque. I have Josh Wolf. He has his band called the Wild Wolf Band.
Yeah, right?
They played the Forums with Chelsea Handler. How awesome is
that?
She played the Forums. That's incredible,
dude.
Kudos to her. Right.
Right on.
So I got him. Do you know Dom Barris is?
I know the name.
Dom Barris does crowd warm up. And he is literally this comedic mastermind that just got this job as a warm-up guy for Jimmy Kimmel, which is an amazing job.
Sure,
and he's very happy to do it. But he just goes Comedy Store late night, and it's the most insane thing you'll ever watch because he's just a mastermind at manipulating people. He uses crowd members like chess pieces, and he's able to get people to do the craziest thing. Well, he's got this band called the Barris Kennedy Overdrive. Mm-hmm. They're doing a show, and then I got, you know, Clownvis is singing too. So it's going to be just
be quite a night.
I'm Caviar Gold is my sponsor. It's a they're called the strongest medicine on the planet. It's a weed. They grow weed. I have them. Sam's Hofbräu, which is this crazy strip bar downtown where they took a Denny's, turned it into a strip bar. Greatest place on the planet. And then Hustler store is coming down. So it's going to be a big show. But if you want to be in the next one, you're available. I will put you, I'm telling you, dude.
Dude, set me up with
it's the closest the you'll ever be to a rock star. A whole packed room of people singing along with you.
I'm so on board with this.
You'll love it, dude.
All right, let's talk about DVDs.
Let's do
real
it.
Quick. We have Transcendence.
Boy, that Johnny Depp thing.
Yes.
What the fuck?
He either crushes or swings and a misses.
Yeah.
Swing and a miss and splits his pants and, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so. This movie.
You know, it's. Everyone saw Christopher Nolan's name until they realized he wasn't directing it.
Yeah.
Single Moms Club and Sabotage. So I don't know if I would rent DVDs this week.
Wow.
It's not a big week for DVDs. Right. Now, premiering this week in the movie theaters, however.
They look like good movies coming out.
Hercules.
I want to see this.
Hercules. You know what?
I want to see it.
I love The Rock. He's wearing a lion's head.
Yes.
And the only thing that makes me a little nervous is Brett Ratner directing.
I know.
But, Brett Ratner. But I do want to see it because I love The Rock.
This is what he was genetically designed to do.
100%.
This is what he does. What The Rock should be doing.
By the way, he will become president and Idiocracy will be fulfilled. I'm telling you.
He's got my vote.
Yeah.
And the next kick-ass hero is Lucy.
I'm excited about this, right? Yeah. Anybody else think this doesn't look badass?
Yeah, it looks cool. Yeah, I want to see it too.
It looks great. It sounds to me like a cool concept. It sounds like cool science fiction.
Right.
She looks like...
She's hot.
She's great. She's a hot badass.
Yeah, I like thick chicks.
Yeah.
I saw her once on Melrose. I'm like, wow, you're thick, and I like it.
Oh, she's gorgeous. I love her.
Magic in the Moonlight. This is actually the new Woody Allen movie that I think has Colin Firth and Emma Stone,
And Colin Firth are in it.
Where, you know, she's like a charlatan and then he tries to expose her, but then I believe falls for her. So,
all right. Woody Allen, you love him or you don't.
There's something for everyone this weekend at the movie.
Whatever
theater.
You want.
And, and that's it.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Sam, where can people find you on the line?
SamTripoli.com, at SamTripoli, TRIPOLI, NaughtyShow.net, and PunchDrunkSports.com.
You guys, listen to The Naughty Show. It's a blast if you haven't already.
We got to get you guys back on. We've always talked about doing summer blockbusters, but I know you guys are busy editing this thing, but when you have a moment, come back on and we'll talk shop again.
We'll do it. Oh, that'd be great. Because you know what? We'll promote the fact that you're going to be doing The Naughty Show at the Los Angeles.
We're very excited. Yes. We're trying to work on something really big.
Yes.
We're going to see if it can come together, but we will go big.
Friday night. Opening night of the festival. These guys are doing the late night slot. It is everything.
It's going to be exactly.
I turned down a really big gig to do this thing because everybody on our show is really excited about it, and they so we're going to go big on this thing. So guys, I'm very excited. I'm very thankful you guys have asked us to do it again.
You're awesome. Cool. They did it the first year. We're lucky to have them back, guys. So check out all the Sam stuff. His new album, Believe in Yourself.
Yep, available on iTunes.
Excellent.
Is there a physical CD too, or is it just digital?
If you go on allthingsrecords.com, you can buy it there too.
Right on.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because you did this through All Things Comedy. Okay, awesome.
Very cool.
Those guys are great.
Great label. Al, Bill, the whole group over there are class acts, and it's just getting bigger.
That's cool, man. All right, guys. So, of course, as we said, Los Angeles Podcast Festival, September 26th through the 28th.
Yes, tickets available now.
Tickets available. We're about to release the actual schedule, you guys.
Yes.
So, you know, the Naughty Show is Friday night, but we're going to release the whole schedule. So, lapodfest.com. We're going to be putting up a way to save the buy through our site, the affiliate thing for the hard tickets.
Yes, in a very convoluted way, we're going to be offering for you to buy tickets through the site, and then Graham and I will get a little taste.
A little taste. So if you haven't bought your tickets already, you can buy them through us.
Do we have that code yet?
Yeah, we should.
Okay, all right.
he sent it out to all the podcasters, but maybe he didn't include us because we're running the festival.
So at worst, go to lapodfest.com and you can buy it.
Get your tickets. Discount whole hotel rooms are still available. They are going fast, though.
Oh, now, wait a minute. There's a little glitch. If you click through from the hotel, it may not go all the way through. So you can just call and tell them you want the
The Sofitel had some little thing with their website. They're figuring that out. If that isn't fixed, it should be fixed very quickly. If it's not.
But if it isn't, you can just call. They know what you're talking about.
Yeah, if you say Podfest. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. That is everything. Of course,
and we will see you guys. We will see you guys at Comic-Con this week.
Comic-Con, of course, guys. Go at Comedy Film Nerds is the Twitter. Go to the Comedy Film Nerds fan page on the Facebook. Like it. Tell your friends to like it. Spread the word, and we will hopefully see you down in Sweet Home San Diego. Thank you once again to Sam Tripoli. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.